This is Soulful Living on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Terry Williams.
Hey, wherever you are in the world today, I welcome you to another 30 minutes of Soulful Living here at Empower Radio. I have been studying shamanic teachings and what my guest today, Joan Wilcox, will talk more about mystical traditions for a long time. My first experience was around 26 years ago when my son had an injury. I'm not going to get into that today. I am going to tell you that I make a point of what I call expanding my own consciousness and my own work through continuing ed. And this year I was introduced to Joan through a colleague of mine who I had begun talking about mysticism and shamanic work and the different teachings that are surrounding the Peruvian community. And she suggested that I look into Joan's work. Well, lo and behold, at that time, Joan was offering a workshop and I jumped in. And I have loved every minute of her teachings and the information that she shared, and also being able to incorporate some of the work and the teachings into my own life. My hope is that when I complete this first workshop, to be able to even share some of the empowering experiences with my clients. So with that said, I welcome you to Soulful Living, Joan.
Hi, Terry. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, I'm so honored. You have been studying the Kiro and the Andean masters for over 20 years. And the information that you share and the guiding principles behind their work has been incredible. So thank you so much for stepping up and stepping out to do that.
Thank you. My pleasure.
So, you know, when we talked briefly before you came on, we talked about mystical traditions and shamanic traditions. And you mentioned that the Andean Kiros focus on mystical, not necessarily calling themselves shamans.
Yes. And, you know, it's a little bit of an academic distinction because, you know, words morph over time. And nowadays, people use the word shaman to refer to, you know, all kinds of things that have to do with energy and metaphysics and supernatural. But I like to be clear about the meaning of the words I use as an ex-academic, and so that my students and others that, you know, want to work in the tradition will really have a good grounding in what it is they're doing. And so I do make a distinction between a shaman and a mystic, and I think it's an important distinction, if a little bit academic. And if you want me to just kind of plunge in for a brief explanation, I'll certainly do that right now.
Absolutely. You take it away.
Okay. Well, traditionally, a shaman is defined as someone who can alter his or her consciousness at will. And they do that for the purposes of accessing supernatural realms, we'll just call them, beyond the known sensory and physical realms that we acknowledge in the scientific, materialistic, Western kind of philosophy and worldview. And they access those realms in order to gather information to then bring back to a community to empower the community. So whether it's, you know, in the olden times to find out where the best hunting places were, or to come back with information about a disease so that they can effect a better healing. In any case, they would do this in an altered state of consciousness, and they would have practices that would allow them to enter at will these altered states of consciousness and then come back to the community. And that's an operative part of this definition, is that a shaman is usually, no one calls themselves a shaman. It's a title that is conferred upon them by the community because of their power and their ability to act in this kind of metaphysical way. And as opposed to that, or in contrast to that, a mystic isn't necessarily shifting his or her consciousness. Instead, they're having a direct connection, apprehension of nature, and it may induce a transcendent state, a transcendent feeling, but they're usually in more of a normal state of consciousness. Even though a transcendent feeling can feel like a shifted state of consciousness, they're not using actual practices to, you know, drumming, fasting, using psychotropics, things like that, ecstatic dancing that a shaman would use to induce the altered state. A mystic is just communing with nature and using a normal state of consciousness. That's kind of the quick overview. There's a lot more to it than that. And in the Andes part of Peru, the tradition that I teach and have studied is not Peruvian, because there's many different kind of practices and worldviews and cosmovisions within Peru, three or four very distinct traditions. This is mm-hmm. a tradition from the mountain tradition, which we call the Andean after the Andes Mountains. And they are much more about not altering consciousness, but still being able to do the same things a shaman might do in a normal state of consciousness. So they see it as just an expanded capacity of our humanness without having to induce it. So that's just a little bit of a distinction. So in that sense, though, being a mystic is simply about becoming a master of your own energy so that you're conscious of your continual interchanges with the world of living energy, with nature.
Okay? It's much less formalized. As someone who has, followed the shamanic teachings, and I even wrote a workshop on the shamanic journey practice, I really appreciate the shamanic journey. I love the shamanic journey practice. I also love the wisdom behind being able to not have to have that type of outer experience and be able to tap into the nature. The natural realm, to nature, to light, to source, to whatever it is that, you know, people want to call it, in the present moment. And that was really one of the key draws for me to the Andean practices, is that even myself, I had found myself experiencing moments of being able to just connect at will, you know, not needing to follow the shamanic journey path. And I really appreciate that about these teachings, because it's helped me enhance it. And I think that anybody that studied it, it would enhance their life wherever they are at on their path.
Yes, you know, as energy beings, I think the whole point of any practice or tradition is for us to be walking along a path of conscious evolution, to be the mm-hmm. most consciously evolved human beings that we can. And I think the Andean path is a very direct and efficient way to do that. Mm-hmm. But that said, if, you know, we want to explore this kind of infinitely creative and novel energy universe, we can bring to our practice all kinds of tools. Some of those tools may be shamanic, such as a shamanic journey. And some mm-hmm. of them may be more mystical. So, you know, we can have a tool bag full of tools. The key is to know when to use what tool, you know, in what
right.
situation. To
yeah,
be able to
absolutely.
choose based on some kind of knowledge.
Well, and practitioners in the Andean traditions are called pacos, correct?
Yes, yes.
And how do they show up in the world? So what would be their role in the community?
You know, in a sense, there's a couple of different kind of practices in the Paco, on the path of a Paco. There's the Alta Masayoc and the Pampa Masayoc. And the Alta Masayoc and the Pampa Masayoc learn the same things, but their focuses are a little bit different. So the Alta Masayoc would be someone who could communicate directly with the spirit beings. Someone who is able to generate love power, which is called Munai, and healing power, which is called Hampe, at their will, to be able to tune and move energy at such frequencies that it has those impacts. A Pampa Messiah, on the other hand, may know those things, but is less able to commune directly with the spirit world. They're really masters of certain practices, such as the despacho practice, which is an interchange of energy, but it's a practice that's it's a quite an elaborate kind of a nature mandala. It's a physical manifestation of an inner state, and they're the master practitioners. So the Alta Messiah would be seen as more of a spiritual leader, perhaps more on a healing path, where the Pampa Messiah would be seen more as a ceremonialist. You want a blessing for opening a business, you are desiring to have a baby and you're having trouble, you know, getting pregnant, you're facing a sickness and you want to enhance your immune system, then they can offer these despachos to the spirit beings as a prayer and a blessing and a request for those kinds of things. Where that would be the Pampa Messiah, where the Alta Messiah would just directly commune with the spirit beings. So much less ceremonial, much less outward embodiment on the Alta Messiah path. It's a much more inner, just pure energetic connection.
Well, and I read on one of your blogs that they teach the art of energy and that they ground their practices in four primary arts. What would that be? What does that look like?
Well, there's a lot to understand about energy in the Andes because they have a very different conception of energy than many other traditions. And so perhaps I can just speak to that for a moment. Their cosmovision is that we live in a world of living energy. It's called Kausai. The Kausai Pacha is the world of living energy. And that the main thing that moves energy, the way humans interface with this world of living energy, is through intention. Okay, we don't really need any feathers, crystals, ecstatic dancing, fasting, psychotropics. We simply need to use our intention, which means mm-hmm. we're always in interchange with the world of living energy. But we may not be conscious of how we're moving energy. And so really the primary practice is to become conscious of your Aini. Aini is an interchange of energy. You're doing it anyway. Every minute of every day, each one of us is moving energy in a certain way, and it has a certain effect in our lives. And we can look at the condition of our lives to see how conscious or unconscious we are of those Aini exchanges. But almost all of the practices of the Andes would be about us becoming more conscious of these Aini exchanges and accumulating what we call personal power. That's not about dominance or hierarchy or, you know, being overbearing in any way and imposing your view on others. Personal power is simply about having a really clean energy body. The more coherent your energy body is and the more conscious you are of your energy exchanges, the more effect you have on influencing the world of living energy. And therefore, the greater manifestation ability you have to live the kind of life you want to live. We can have anything we want from the world of living energy. It is overly abundant. We can take anything we want from it. And most of us are taking things from it. We're modeling and we're manifesting things energetically from our unconscious. And so they're not necessarily things that are serving our well-being. And so the Andean Paco is looking to master the clarity and the consciousness which they are making interchanges with the universe. And I'm not specifically sure what you mean by the four aspects.
Well, you hit, I'm going to read something here because I absolutely loved it. Okay. It was in a blog that said the art of being a Paco teaches the art of energy, ground their practice in four primary arts. But the last one really spoke to me. And I think you mentioned it in one of the sessions for your classes. The art of being a Paco is to become an ecologist of your own energy environment. And it was really the first time that I had the opportunity to look at my own energy from an ecological perspective. And I thought that was a beautiful way to put it, and that, you know, you talk about your energy field being like a bubble, and that it's important to use the tools that in the Andean traditions to, you know, integrate. This is exactly what it says. Integrate the point between outside and inside and with those already inside your energy body. And that it's really about your energy. It's not about, right, you know, and the perfect, pure energy that you can bring in from nature and the cosmos. It's not about, you know, evil and negativity and all of that. It's really about this beautiful, loving energy that you can bring into yourself. And I thought that was amazing. Yes, an amazing way to put it.
In the Andes, their cosmovision is that energy is just energy. It has no moral overlay. So people that come to learn this tradition, that's one of the things they most have to unlearn, because they learn from other traditions that there's evil energy and negative energy. There's energy you have to protect yourself from. And in the Andes, they say, no, energy is just energy. It's just like in physics, an electron is just an electron, or a photon is just a photon. There's not an evil photon, or there's not a negative photon, except, you know, there's charge, but I'm not talking about charge. You know, but in terms of its moral overlay, energy is just energy. And then we overlay our moral and ethical system onto energy. But if energy is just energy, it can never hurt you. What we can do, we can project our fear out onto it, but there's nothing to protect yourself from. So it's an incredibly liberating approach to being and working as an energy being. And Elizabeth Jenkins and I kind of came up with that terminology, that being a Paco is being an ecologist of your energy environment. Because in this tradition, you want to be able to interchange energy with every kind of nuance, every frequency and vibration of this infinitely creative Kausai Pacha, this world of living energy. You want to be able to taste it all, to interact with it all, and never to put yourself into an energetical jail. So there's really nothing that you have to protect yourself from. I'm not saying there aren't human beings that have evil intent, but I'm saying just in the world of living energy, human beings are the only creatures that create something called hucha. And hucha is heaviness. It's not bad, contaminating, dirty, evil, or negative. It's simply this kausai, the energy that makes up everything, that was first cause. It's simply that our psychology, our emotions, the incongruity of our words, thoughts, actions, and deeds ends up slowing energy down. So the very worst thing is slow energy, and slow energy can't hurt you. Our practices are to get that slowed energy kind of sped back up into its natural flow, because Kausai's nature is to move unimpeded. Energy should be moving unimpeded. We should be perfect absorbers of energy and perfect radiators of energy. But when we go to absorb energy, and because of all of our emotional turmoil, we end up slowing it down and it kind of gets stuck or blocked on our energy body. That's all that's happening, is the energy is getting slowed down and we're not radiating it properly. And so there's nothing to fear. And so all of the practices are about moving and tuning energy, not about protecting yourself from energy.
Well, and they are traditions that are based on cultivating joy and well-being. Yeah. I remember you talking about them, you know, looking at play as sacred. And so, of course, you would want to not have that sense of heaviness, because that would make you feel less than joyful, physically, emotionally, spiritually, you know, whatever way you want to look at it. And I like that absorb and then radiate, again, goes back to being another form of Aini.
Yes, that's what Aini is the energetic interchange. We're always an energetic interchange. So our practices are to become conscious of how we're absorbing energy and how we're radiating energy. And if we see that we're slowing energy down and creating what we call hucha, or this heaviness, which over time can detract from our well-being, then we have tools that can help us to transform it, transmute it. And that, of course, then brings us back to a greater state of well-being. And that's why they say Pacos are beings of joy. The word for the work of the Andes is pulye, which means play. It's sacred play. It's like you're at play in the universe of living energy. There's nothing to fear, so you can be like a child at play. And like a child who is in the moment and has this, what we call kuyai, passion. You're in the moment, passionately engaged, like a child at play. That's all that the whole world is involved in, what they're focusing on in the moment. We can be that passionately engaged in our lives as energy beings and as conscious human beings. I mean, one of the really important points I want to bring to your listeners is that another reason this path is not shamanic is that we're not looking to leap beyond the human. You know, Carlos Castaneda, the Yaqui tradition, which is how maybe people in my generation came to shamanism and then to mysticism, it was about leaping beyond the human. We're not looking for to leap into some kind of a nirvana or heaven. We're looking mm-hmm. to bring nirvana or heaven right here on earth. We're looking to be human beings that express themselves as God in the physical body. So we're very focused on the quality of our human lives, our human world, our human relationships, and in bringing joy and well-being to ourselves, our families, our communities, and ultimately the world. There's this prophecy called the rise of the Runakai Mossok, the new humanity. As we each consciously evolve, we contribute to the conscious evolution of our species. And we will eventually, raise the energy vibration so that we morph into a new species of human, which is the metaphysical man or man and woman. And then that would be a more, harmonious, joyful world, a way of human living in the physical world. So we're very rooted in our humanness. But we're seeking to raise the vibration of our humanness rather than to leap beyond it into some supernatural world and leave this behind or leave who we are behind.
I think that in today's fast-paced society and the internet and instant gratification and all of these other factors that come into play in the busyness of what is happening in our world today, that is so much... so much needed, staying grounded in our humanness and being able to fully step into where we are at instead of constantly reaching outside for something else to fulfill it, and bring that back in, bring that into your life so that you can live now in joy and love and feel more harmonious.
Exactly.
And soulful.
There's kind of a paradoxical view in the Andes because they say that we are each the center of the universe. We can only mm-hmm. know the universe through our own perceptions. We can't really know anything outside ourselves. We can only know the world is filtered through ourselves. And that's true energetically as well. And yet, as humans, one of the most important aspects of our humanness is our relationships. We can't live without, human touch and human interaction, social interaction.
Right.
And
right.
So we're working both in a very kind of self-centered way, not self-centered in as, we use that term in terms of our own joy at everybody else's expense, but self-centered mm-hmm. in that we have to start with ourselves. We have to consciously evolve ourselves. But we're not islands. We are involved in social relationships. And so we work simultaneously at also raising the vibration of the whole human species in our society, in our cultures. We start with our family, and then we work outward to our community, and mm-hmm. to our state, and to our nation. The really important thing to understand is that this path is, there's 7 levels of consciousness, and the practices are very practical. They're very practical. They're very efficient. And they're about helping us take very pointed steps, very clearly laid out steps in terms of climbing this stairway of 7 steps, the 7 steps of consciousness.
Well, I know personally, in just the couple of months that I've been working with you, I've seen changes in my own life and how I work through my day-to-day efforts. So, Joan, we're down to the wire here. It goes by so fast, doesn't it?
It really does.
I know. We only have about 2 minutes left, and I want to remind the listeners, I'm chatting with Joan Wilcox. You can find all of her information on the Soulful Living page here at Empower Radio. And if you are at all interested in her teachings, her website will be listed on the page. Of course, you can just click it and hit it. It is Kentawasi. I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Kentawasi.
Yeah, QENTIWASI.com. And check it out. I'm sure, Joan, you'll offer another online workshop. And you have live workshops as well?
Yes, I travel around the country teaching. The training takes place over 3 weekends, spaced out over a couple of months. And I just started people that can't travel or want to learn from home. I'm doing just an audio only training live on Skype. And so far it's worked out well. It's, you know, it's not ideal, but it you can get, you know, 90% of the teaching through the Skype training. And I'll probably be starting another series of Skype teachings toward the end of January. So if people are interested, they can email me at kentiwasi@gmail.com. Again, that's QENTIWASI@gmail.com.
Well, and I can certainly attest to it. It's been a wonderful experience. So, Joan, as I close out the show, of course, I offer you a deep bow of gratitude. I'm so grateful you are here. And I'd love for you to leave the listeners with something they can take out into the day to empower themselves, elevate their soul, raise their own vibration in some way.
Okay.
What would that
quickly
be?
And, you know, in the Andes, they say that at the moment that your father's sperm touched your mother's egg, something alchemical happened. And some energy reached out into the living universe and pulled down a stream of energy into that egg. And that is you. That you are a drop of the mystery, a unique drop of the mystery. And that your unique mission in life lives within you as an Inca seed. And it's each of our responsibilities to kind of nurture and grow that Inca seed so that we are living as who we truly are in this human life. And that one day we will give our life back to the Kausai Pacha. That's the great Aini. We will give ourselves back. We'll give ourselves back as a fully engaged, more consciously evolved human being.
Thank you. That was beautiful. And thank you for being here with me today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.